You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Diamondbacks baseball.
And he corks one way back, and it is gone!
The D-backs BP show.
Fly ball to left, hit pretty well by Lamb at the wall, it's gone!
Diamondbacks radio network.
There's a shot to center field, Parr on the run, can't get it, he gets by him, all the way to the wall, bounces more towards center, Marte turns second, he heads for third, Tony Perez-Chica's racing into the plate, here comes the throw, it's high, he is safe!
D-backs BP show.
Welcome to our weekly look around Major League Baseball and with the D-backs. I'm Mike Farron, and our producer engineer, as always, is Leo Gilmartin. Technical director tonight, Luke Robbins. I'm joined by the television voice of the Diamondbacks, Steve Berthume. And it's nice for us to be back weekly, Bert, to try and update folks on what's going on both around the Valley and around Major League Baseball. There hadn't been a whole lot of new news in the last week.
No, we do have some testing news out for Major League Baseball, Mike, and we're looking forward to Jackie Robinson Day coming up tomorrow. We'll talk to Carson Kelly in about 15 minutes, and we'll discuss what's going on with the D-backs in Major League Baseball. So we'll find a way to fill the hour, and don't forget our Gubna segment coming up, in about 20, 30 minutes.
Yeah, Gubs greats today, focusing on Game 5 of the 2001 National League Championship Series, the game that sent the Diamondbacks to the World Series that year. Well, let's start with the news that broke this afternoon with regards to Major League Baseball and COVID-19 antibody testing. A study being done by Stanford University and USC chose Major League Baseball as a participant where they were going to test more than 10,000 employees across the country. 27 of the 30 teams are participating, including the Diamondbacks. Now, I think it's real important to point out, guys, first and foremost, that these are not the tests that people are going through drive-thrus for, where they're testing you to see whether or not you have COVID-19. These are not being taken away from healthcare workers. This is a research study that's being done to determine whether or not you may have had this at one point and recovered. So it's to give you positive or negative test for the antibodies for it. And it is not in any way associated with the idea of getting Major League Baseball back on the field this year, Bert. It's about research for these universities to try and determine what the prevalence is of people who may have recovered from COVID in communities. And because baseball is spread out in so many different metropolitan areas, it makes it a little bit easier for them to be able to locate a large group of people, the 10,000 or so that will be taking tests.
Yeah, the doctor who is the president of the organization conducting the test was very quick to point that out, that baseball did not partner with them for any particular selfish reason to get the sport back sooner. They did it for public health policy. So Major League Baseball, its employees, I know you've had the test. Yeah. I have not. Leo has as well.
Correct.
In a sense, are being used as a controlled sample to try and gauge how the virus spreads and when politicians might find it safe to reopen the country.
Leo, the test itself was pretty easy. I mean, people might be interested in just kind of knowing a little bit about it because it kind of is a combination between what you would do, I guess, if you were testing yourself, your blood sugar if you're diabetic, and also a pregnancy test. That's what kind of feel to it. I know you have experience with both.
For you, there was a good news, bad news kind of scenario,
yes,
right?
Yeah. I may not, you know, Mike, I may not be the best one to talk about the ease of this test because it is.
Oh, no, you had the same issue I did.
It is very simple. I have four fingers that are very sore at the tip because I failed several times.
Well, they say the test looks very similar to a pregnancy test.
It does.
It is easy. It's actually, it reminds me also like an INR test it was very simple. It was very straightforward. Everyone was very helpful. I personally was thrilled to be able to participate. I'm a big fan of any kind of information. I made it probably a lot more difficult than I needed to.
Yeah, we may have had a test that was submitted that had a little bit of blood smeared in spots that wasn't supposed to be. So
looked like a crime scene over here by the time I was done.
Well, according to the lab, it's a test kit draws the blood with a pinprick. You get the results in 10 minutes, and the test detects the prevalence of an antibody, which is produced relatively early in those who have been infected with the coronavirus, and then you can confirm if you did have it at one point or if you're asymptomatic. So there's a lot of a good result to be garnered here, and hopefully this will help not speed baseball up. That's not the point, but give the politicians and the governments an idea of when you can start to have discussions about opening things up.
Well, and I think, too, if as just a, in general, like if testing like this becomes available, because this seems to be what one of the testing – there are two different kinds of tests, right? Testing to determine whether or not you have the disease currently and testing whether or not to maybe you've had it or if you are negative. And this is the kind of thing that could be sent around to people's houses pretty easily. It's easy to use. There could be there is the opportunity potentially to mass produce it down the line. So I think that those are all parts of this. I also want to point out that this isn't just something that was like handed to front office or broadcasters or whatever. There are game day workers. There are spouses. There are about 10,000 people in all walks of baseball, and there are a lot of people in baseball that do a lot of different jobs behind the scenes that had that volunteered to be a part of this test too. So it's I think that that's one of the interesting things too, is that they wanted to try and get as big a different a demographic as they could, and because baseball's played in major cities, it was easier to do it that way.
Yeah, if you're looking for a real sort of perfect nationwide sample and try and get a sense of the true infection rate, I would think that Major League Baseball, its players, all its employees would be the perfect test case.
There was some COVID-related news with regards to the Diamondbacks today as well. Archie Bradley was a guest on the Doug and Wolf program this morning here on 98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station. And he had some comments a little bit as his father had been dealing with this.
I'm keeping the bigger picture in mind. You know, a lot of people don't know this. We're getting through it now. But my dad is actually coming or surviving corona right now. He was released from the hospital about 7 days ago.
Oh, God bless.
But he was a confirmed patient and had pneumonia. And so I kind of went through that whole thing with my dad just not too long ago. And so I think that's what most of us are doing is we understand as much as I was just saying, you know, I am being selfish. I do want to play baseball, but it is baseball. And I think that's what most of us are remembering. It's sports.
Stand by.
And there's people out there that are dying right now and really struggling. And so, you know, that's, I think, where our main focus is. But, yeah, from a playing perspective and normal world perspective, I want to play baseball bad.
Archie Bradley this morning on the Doug and Wolf program talking about his own personal battle. And Leo, that not necessarily an easy thing for Archie and his family to go through right now, for sure.
No, you know, it's funny. I was listening to that again. And, you know, what a great snapshot of what so many people are going through. You know, here's a pro athlete that just really wants to get back and play, but understands as well as anyone how devastating and how scary this thing is. So it's interesting to hear him balance out between wanting to get back out there, but also taking care of what needs to be taken care of and making sure everyone's going to be safe and healthy.
Yeah, and I think that kind of fits with some of the comments today from Major League Baseball. There was another story in The Athletic about an update on Major League Baseball and the so-called Arizona plan, which was first released last Monday in an article by Jeff Passan, where he mentioned the Major League Baseball and the Players Association had at least discussed a plan that would put all 30 teams in Arizona playing in spring training complexes without fans in the stands. Major League Baseball has not really made any progress on that. In fact, the commissioner of Major League Baseball, Rob Manfred, was on Fox Business News this morning saying that they do not even have a plan in place, that they have a lot of ideas. And Bert, first and foremost, said that the main thing is that we can't really do anything until we know that it's safe for the public and that we are through the bulk of the public health crisis, that's number one for Major League Baseball. And that's been their stance all along, is like, listen, it's not going to be something that we rush back into. I think people got concerned about that when that article came out because it suggested that May it could happen. But the commissioner again today being very, very clear about the fact that the public health is the number one priority before baseball even considers a return in 2020.
Yeah, he really did strongly make that point this morning, Mike, and it was interesting, and you just mentioned it. He even tried to shy away from the word plan. He said, look, we don't have plans, we have ideas. There are contingency ideas. Right now, it's essentially a waiting game. And I think that's true for everybody involved in this, every business, every citizen, all of us. We're just waiting this out. But the key is public health. When that's shown signs of improvement, then maybe ideas can be transformed and formed into plans. But they're all contingencies at this point. And in fact, he said, I got it right in front of me. From our perspective, we don't have a plan. We have lots of ideas.
Yeah, I think it was short-sighted and actually quite unfair for people to assume that MLB was just trying to ram something through, that they weren't taking into consideration public health and their employees' health. And I think that was absurd. That was always going to be first and foremost in any plan, getting baseball back in the public eye.
Yeah, and you know, I'm sorry, Mike, but these days we're not allowed to wait and see on anything because of the talking head culture and two guys on TV shouting at each other. You have to have an immediate take. It has to be definitive, and you have to say it right away. We're no longer allowed in our culture to say, well, let's wait and see. And this thing, to me, is the ultimate let's wait and see.
Does this
let's
grind
everybody
your
just
gears
slow down.
A little bit, Bert?
What?
Does this grind your gears a little bit? The thing that these people and they're talking.
Here's the deal. Let's just wait and see how, as the public health situation evolves, plans will evolve, and in the meantime, let everybody just chill out.
I think the great thing that baseball has going for it is it's got time. I mean, there are enough months left in the calendar year that baseball could be played, that it's not like a decision has to be made right now. And we think about, like, it was just a month ago, like just over a month ago, right? It was a month ago on Monday, I think, that spring training was shut down. And I know it feels like it was a year ago at this point. It was March was the longest month of the history of the world. But there's a lot is going to happen. There's going to be a lot more information that's gained in the next 2 weeks, 4 weeks, 6 weeks on this. And we're going to continue to keep waiting and moving forward. So
just monitor
patience.
The situation, monitor public health, and as the commissioner said, the idea is to try to make baseball part of the recovery and get a return to some sense of normalcy.
I'm just impressed, Bert, that you're trying to make everybody be patient, because patience is one of the hallmarks of Steve Berthiaume's.
I'm not sure what you're implying.
Isn't anyone more patient?
I am frequently impatient, like, for instance, last week when Leo told me the wrong day and time of the show. Like, other than that, by the way, he redeemed himself wonderfully, Mike.
Never
but
misinformed.
We had Leo at the house briefly yesterday.
I would like
dropping
to point
off
out
a,
that,
getting
that
a, rid of your
to do with
terrible
you
headset,
patient.
And Leo gave me a fine piece of
it was
equipment.
A very lovely home, and I'm informed now that they're actually going to move again.
Now you know where I live, so we're going to have to move for the fourth time.
Just delete the address. Are you sure that they didn't just put up a fake home that they invited you to drop off the equipment and then...
They went blazing saddles on it.
The whole house was repacked in a truck and driven away 2 minutes after Leo left.
Coming up on the program, Gubs Greatest. We're going to look back at one of the great games in Diamondbacks history with the Governor, Greg Schulte. We'll talk about Game 5, 2001 National League Championship Series. Against the Atlanta Braves, a game that sent the Diamondbacks to the World Series that year. So we'll hear some highlights from that and visit with the governor about that in just a little bit. And up next, we will talk to Carson Kelly, D-backs catcher. Carson, Mike Farron, Steve Berthiaume, Leo Gilmartin, how are you?
Great, guys. How are you guys?
We're bored, man. We're really bored.
That too.
Aren't we all?
No doubt.
How are you doing?
Good, guys. Just hanging out at home.
I guess I should say, what are you doing?
Playing MLB The Show and trying to go 5 for 5 every game.
How's that working for you?
You know, it's actually been okay. We're getting along there. I think we're in year 2025.
Are you doing road to the show?
Yeah, I did road to the show.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Yeah, so we're putting in some work.
It's good. That game is addictive. I've played it probably 12 hours a day for 3 weeks.
I mean, it's unbelievable. I mean, I'm on my way to try to hit 150 homers a year.
Well, you know,
got it on veteran then, huh?
Yeah.
I mean, who wants to play a video game on the hardest level when you could just hit homers? You know what I mean? Like, why?
Hard to argue with that logic.
We get enough failure in the game of baseball. Let's have a little fun with it, you know?
How is your character representation? How would you grade the accuracy of the face, the body, the movements, the whole thing?
You know, pretty good. I would say it's pretty accurate. I think I did the scan a couple years ago, and it's pretty much been about the same, but I'm a little upset with my speed rating. I know I'm slow. I ain't 20 slow.
Ouch.
You know, like, man, I really wanted to get out there and show my wheels. I've been working hard this off season with a lot of like strength training in my legs and speed work. So, you know, I really wanted to get out there and show it.
So LeCastro's Mr. 99 speed. That's his new nickname, apparently.
And yeah, no, he's Mr. 99. Yeah.
Ouch. So he could literally run circles around you.
Basically, yeah. You know, it's double steel. I got to be on the backside of it.
That's great. We're talking to Carson Kelly. So as long as we're talking about the show, John Duplantier is playing in the Players League. A representative for each team is playing in a tournament of MLB The Show. He went 3-1 in his first games and walked off with you as the hitter in one of them. Have you been texting with John? Did you see the footage of your walk-off home run in this makeup or make-believe game?
I did, and it was awesome. I messaged him right away. You know, I just wanted to give the people what they wanted. I'm just
Oppo
glad I
too,
could come
huh?
through in the clutch. Yeah, you know.
Change up away, you went out toward the pool.
Just stay on it, and, you know, that's something that we've been working on in quarantine mode.
Quarantine mode? I don't have that on my game. There's a quarantine mode?
Hey, when you put in 8-plus hours on the video games a day, that's when it's quarantine mode.
That's true. Great.
Carson, I'm curious. I mean, obviously, so much of last season was there was a lot of firsts. I mean, first full season in the big leagues, first home run, a lot of success overall. When you went into the winter, what were some of the big things that you wanted to focus on in improving going into 2020, other than your speed?
Yeah. Well, I mean, every year I try to take some time at the end of the season and just compress. I mean, and take everything that I've done, and, you know, see what worked, see what didn't work, and formulate a plan. And that plan this year was to continue what I did well, but also make some changes mentally to my diet, to, you know, just main things were really just to get in the best shape that I can and be able to catch, you know, later down the road. And towards the end of the year, I feel like I was getting a little fatigued mentally, physically. There was a lot on my plate, but, you know, it's a great learning experience. The things I could take and put to my work this off season, and I believe it's going to help me later down the road this year.
Going into this spring, your confidence level, your comfort level, having the year with the team under your belt, knowing a lot of the staff and the pitchers you're working with, was that noticeably different for you coming into this spring?
Oh, definitely. Because, you know, coming to as a new player, coming to a different team, it's hard. You got to, you know, learn. You got to learn your teammates. You got to learn what they do, you know, on the mound. You know, how they are in the clubhouse. There's so many different things, and having that comfort now and staying in Arizona also during the off season helped me as well, because there's a lot of guys that stay here. So go out to dinner, play golf, you know, go work out, just having that, those more times to hang out and learn about my teammates is definitely a huge thing.
Carson, as we watched you last year and we talked to the coaches and talked to Torrey, in the first couple of months of the season, April, May, Torrey would often say, man, we are throwing so much at Carson Kelly right now. We expect so much from our catchers. He's on a crash course. He's absorbing this, that, and the other thing. What did it seem overwhelming at times? Because there was a point, it seemed to us, where it all sort of clicked and you suddenly felt comfortable. And that, I think, is when the bat really came around. But what was it like for you in terms of the learning process early last season?
I think sometimes for me, I like to learn, and sometimes I put too much into it. And once I hit that first home run, I think it was just kind of a weight off my shoulders. You let the confidence come into play, because up to that point, it was, I mean, you look at my numbers, I didn't have a ton of success at the big league level. So it was kind of like, oh, okay. Like, I know I can play at this level. And it gave me that boost of confidence. And you know, that's all you need. It's not all you need as a player, but that's what you need. You need to have that confidence. And when you don't have it or you're searching for it, it's hard to play at the highest level.
We're visiting for another moment with Carson Kelly, D-backs catcher. You know, last year it seemed like your relationship with Alex Avila was really unique. What did it mean to have him around, and what kind of a relationship did you build with Stephen Vogt in those short weeks in spring training?
Oh, Al was tremendous. You know, just from on the field stuff, off the field stuff, the experience that he has, and you know, like one of the first days of spring training, he took me out to dinner and we were just talking and getting to know each other. And, you know, he just wanted to echo that he's there to help me in any way. And, you know, I'm very thankful for the opportunity to be with him. And then same with Steven. I've known Steven a little bit when he was with Milwaukee, and then all last year when we played the Giants. Me and him always talked, and, you know, he's a tremendous person, and, you know, I just can't wait to get back out there on the field and learn from him as well.
You know, it's interesting, Carson. It seems that the catching position is unique in that regard, in that when players get a little bit older into their early to mid-30s, and I heard Stephen Vogt mention this during spring training, and Alex was much the same way, they're sort of content to be, in a sense, a part-time player, not go through that grind every day, and serve as a mentor to the younger guy coming up behind them. Do you find that to be the case?
Yeah, you know, I think so. I just, again, it goes back to experience. I learned a lot, too, from being behind Yachty in St. Louis and learning from Mike Matheny as well. I mean, that's the thing with the catchers. It's like a brotherhood. So no matter what, starter, not starter, been there for a ton of time, doesn't have a lot of time. You know, we're always trying to help each other because the guys that have been there know it's such a demanding position, both physically and mentally. So, you know, any help, you know, and you talk to any catcher's going to help you.
Carson, before we let you go, obviously you have a little more free time on your hand than you normally would on April 14th. So, any good books? Have you been binge watching anything on television? Can you make any strong recommendations for us?
I just finished Red Circle by Brandon Webb. It's a Navy SEAL sniper book, and it's fantastic. So that's one book. And my fiance Eloise has got me watching Grey's Anatomy. Like,
oh, no.
Running, like, unbelievable. It's like 24/7. It's on.
Oh, God.
And, you know, she's getting me sucked in on it, and it's actually okay. I'm actually okay on it.
I also saw on Twitter you're working on your short game a little bit in golf.
Yeah, you know, I get my workout in, and then you go right to the chipping. You know, that's something you can do in 4 feet, which is, you know, what I got back there. But so my chipping's actually – so when – if I get out there and play golf, I know my chipping is going to be locked and loaded.
That's great. Is she making you watch Grey's Anatomy, like, from the beginning? Because the first few seasons are okay. It's when you start getting into season, like, 92 that it really becomes problematic.
Well, yeah. Well, that's the thing. So she's like, oh, I'm on season 17, episode whatever. I'm like, okay, well, I have no idea what's going on. And she's like, okay, then we'll start from the beginning. I'm like, oh, boy, here we go.
Well, you walked right into it, didn't you?
Yeah, I walked right in. Yeah. I don't know, guys. I need help. I need to get out of here for a little bit.
Yeah, you get McDreamy, McSteamy, you'll get all over.
At least he's he's not watching Tiger King, Mike.
Well, he doesn't have great taste, apparently, then, because
his
Tiger King
is higher than
I've
yours.
I've watched it twice.
Thank you, Carson.
No. See?
I've watched it twice.
Did Carol Baskin do it?
You know, I don't know. I really don't know. I go back and forth. I'm waiting for I think they said there's more information coming or something later.
Oh, thank goodness.
Is there another show? Or are they doing
I have no idea.
But once I find out,
I'll let you guys know.
Yeah. Carson, we appreciate the time. Stay safe, man. It's good to catch up with you. Hopefully we get a chance to see you in the not-too-distant future.
Sounds great, guys. Thanks for having me.
Thanks, Carson.
Carson Kelly joining us for a few moments here. By the way, I just pulled up John Duplantier's Twitch stream, and he was 3-1 on his first day in this tournament. He is trailing 1-0 in the bottom of the first facing Bo Bichette. And I actually think, let's see, somebody just went deep 3-run homer. So he's down 4-0 now
By the way, you can follow if you want to watch those games. It's really fun to watch because the players are in the little box in the corner and the video game is on the main screen. You can actually follow and watch that game on some of the D-backs channels. It's all being done to raise money for charity.
And Twitch.
It's on Twitch. And the game is remarkably realistic. If you've never seen it, it's a lot of fun to watch and play. So we encourage you all to do that.
Bert is an expert on
if they ever get that broadcaster tournament going, I think we're in good hands.
The game is remarkably realistic, I will say that. Except, as Tori mentioned last week, he looks nothing like himself in the video game.
Oh, no, it's really bad. Like, unflattering for him.
You know, I was trying to picture it after we had him on the show last week, and I went back and looked at him in one of the games on the video game. I kind of have him as a young Robert Duvall, but not a little older than Godfather Robert Duvall. I'd probably say Great Santini Robert Duvall.
He looks like an extra from Casino. It's bad. It's terrible.
He's like, I'm going to go get the papers.
He said everything two times.
There's Pete the Killer, who's Sally Ball's brother.
Time for another one of Gubb's greatest here on the D-backs BP show. And today, the moment that set the Diamondbacks to their first and only World Series so far in franchise history. Game 5, 2001 National League Championship Series at Turner Field in Atlanta. And Greg, I want to go back. I know we talked about this before the rebroadcast we had a few weeks ago of Game 7 of the World Series. But you've been in the Valley for 40-plus years now, and you know how many close calls there were for the Suns over the course of the years, and the Cardinals making it to a Super Bowl, you know, not long after the Diamondbacks won the World Series. What did that day, knowing that this could be the day that the Diamondbacks make it to the World Series, what did it mean to people in the Valley?
Well, it meant a lot. As you said, you know, the Suns had some disappointment, to say the least, when they got to the championship round. Great games, great series, but couldn't quite get there. And for the Diamondbacks to get to the World Series, it was simply a situation that transpired into their fourth season. Nobody expected that, especially after, you know, you saw Ball Club lose almost 100 games in season one, rally around some shrewd moves by Jerry Colangelo and Joe Garagiola Jr. to bring in some veterans, including Randy Johnson, trade for Luis Gonzalez, signed Steve Finley in year two on 100 ball games, trade for Curt Schilling in 2000, and then get to, the top of the mountain in 2001. And in a year that really this nation needed something good to come, and they had a chance to see a pretty good postseason and a pretty good World Series, to say the least.
I want to skip back before we get to Game 5, because the series was tied at a game apiece as it goes to Atlanta, and Atlanta had lined up for their three games there, and Games 4 and Game 5 were going to be Greg Maddux and Tom Glavine. Curt Schilling dominates Game 3. Yeah. And you know that the one team that Greg Maddux had issues with over the course of his career was the Diamondbacks. So what was the feeling going into Game 4, before we even get to Game 5, but going into Game 4, knowing that the D-backs always seem to have the number of one of the greatest right-handed pitchers of all time?
Well, you felt pretty good, especially Luis Gonzalez, who had more home runs against Greg Maddux than anybody else in his history. But they had his number. They'd get guys on base. They'd run on him because Maddux, you know, Mike, did not really care about the base runners. He rarely threw over, so the Diamondbacks would get on, they'd run, they'd steal, they'd take extra bases. And I've got this picture in my mind so many times with Greg Maddux, who I think was 3-10 in his career against the Arizona Diamondbacks, taking off his cap and wiping his brow. And just an expressionless look on his – no expression on his face, because he couldn't figure things out against Arizona. For whatever reason, that was his team that caused him problems, and they caused him problems in the regular season and, of course, in the postseason. And he didn't do very well in that game number four.
No, Diamondbacks win that one 11-4. He doesn't make it out of the fourth inning. Council ends his day with a double. They're one win away, the Diamondbacks are, from the World Series, and you have a pair of Hall of Famers – going head-to-head in Game 5 in Randy Johnson and Tom Glavine. And it was a tremendous pitcher's duel throughout. The Braves had the lead. There was a key moment in this game that doesn't necessarily show up right away in the box score, and that was the injury to Mark Grace. So what did you notice with Gracie's injury and Bob Brenly's decision-making there?
Well, they had to get him out. He couldn't go any further, so, you know, Durazo had to come on and pinch hit.
And Durazo will bat for Grace, so Grace must be injured.
Right hamstring.
Right hamstring. Oh, boy.
Right hamstring
for Grace. Durazo has never faced Glavine in his career.
Well, that hurts the Diamondbacks with Grace injury in the hamstring.
But if you do end up winning this game, he's got 5 days
right
off. So that's the one good thing.
That's the importance of winning this game.
Some would say, why not Colburn here? Probably what Bob Brenly's thinking is he'd like to save Colburn as a pinch-hitting situation where he might be able to get them a RBI-based hit. And Durazo's done a nice job against lefties.
Fortunately, you got a guy like Durazo, or if Durazo was playing, you got a guy like Grace. And even to back those guys up, you got Greg Colburn. So you had a lot of, key players that you could use in those type situations. And he could have gone Colburn. No ifs, ands, or buts about that. But he opted to go Durazo, the left-hander, against the left-hander Glavine. It sure worked out well for the D-backs.
Yeah, that was one of those big moments. Were you surprised at all that he went to Durazo?
I was.
In that?
Yeah, I was. I really was. And Ruby, right down that left-field line, it just got inside the pole. And that was the difference maker and what ended up being a 3-2 Diamondback victory.
There's the stretch by Glavine. And now the 2-2 delivery, and Durazo hits it down the left field line pretty deep at the warning track at the wall. Home run, Durazo! Diamondbacks lead 3-1.
Oh, my gosh. A Rubio Durazo. Unbelievable.
How about that? Look at Glavine. He's just walking around in circles out behind the mound.
Well, he has tremendous power to all fields. That's his second career postseason home run. Glavine tries to go away with a fastball. Durazo stays on it really, really nicely. And it gets out right down the line out there by the 325 mark.
Randy Johnson was pretty darn good in that game, too. Gave up two runs in seven innings, including one to Julio an RBI single to Julio Franco in the seventh. But then he turned things over to Byung-Hyun Kim. And I know a lot of people who maybe are casual fans even of the Diamondbacks think of the World Series with Kim's struggles in New York. But he was such a good closer that year. How confident was everyone when Kim came in the game in the eighth in Atlanta?
Pretty confident, especially the way he had been pitching. And he worked two solid innings, didn't allow a hit, had one walk, one base runner, struck out a pair and closed things out. He got the final out on a fly ball to center by Julio Franco and Steve Finley. The one thing I loved about Finley, he was a two-handed catcher. and by that, I mean he would catch any fly ball he could with two hands and secure it into that mitt. And he sure as heck didn't want to drop that ball.
Lockhart, the runner at first. He walked with one out. Kim has struck out two this inning. He battles against Julio Franco here out of the stretch. And the 0-1 pitch. And a high fly ball. Center field. Finley's there. The Diamondbacks are going to the World Series. Finley makes the catch in center. And the Diamondbacks advance to the 2001 World Series as they beat the Braves tonight here at Turner Field, 3-2.
The Diamondbacks have done the unthinkable. In only their fourth year of existence, coming into the Braves' house and sweeping them. But way back in February, they knew the trip to the World Series had to come through this Atlanta team.
Well, the Arizona Diamondbacks defeat the Atlanta Braves 4-1. They come into Atlanta, sweep the Braves, three straight here at Turner Field, and they will start the 2001 World Series next Saturday at Bank One Ballpark against either the New York Yankees, the defending world champs, or the Seattle Mariners. It doesn't get any better than this.
As you look back on that moment, or you thought about it, what it would mean as that ninth inning is coming to a close, where were your thoughts as, you know, having been with the organization and still only in, what, its fourth season at this point, but knowing that you had been one of the first hires and that you were going to be the radio voice of the Diamondbacks coming in, and watching it unfold the way it did from expansion team to playoffs in 99 to now this juggernaut that they were building?
Well, I can't help but say again, we were spoiled with shrewd trades and shrewd free agent signings that were made by the front office. And then you had a bunch of players who had been close, no cigar, that type of situation that had developed in Arizona. Council, I think, was the only member of that World Series team that had won a championship. Anyone that was at 97 in
Florida.
Yeah, for Miami when he scored the winning run on the hit by Renteria over Cleveland. So you had a lot of guys that were up there in age. It was the oldest club in baseball, and it was just a very confident group. And every night I drove to the ballpark or took the bus to the ballpark, you just had a chance. You just had a. I was figuring that they were going to win the ballgame somehow, some ways, somewhere over the course of the nine innings with Randy Johnson, Curt Schilling backing one another up. Johnson pitching one night, Schilling the next. Kim out of the bullpen on offense. It was led by Luis Gonzalez. Had a lot of veterans in there. It was a good, solid ball club, a fun club to watch. And they just had that we will not lose mentality, and that showed all the way through the end.
So what's it like when they don't lose? You know, we hear that a lot from people, and that's like they felt like they were going to win every night. And then they go out and they do it, and they win the pennant. Was there a sense of relief? Did you expect it? What was actually getting through to the World Series like in that regard?
Oh, boy, that's a good question. I think it was a somewhat relief. You sure didn't want to get all that way to the end and lose it. And it sure looked like that after the Soriano home run in Game 7, of course. But just to get to the World Series, win the first two, and then just getting knocked to the floor in Games 3, 4, and 5 in New York. But knowing you had Randy Johnson, Curt Schilling pitching in Game 6 and 7, you felt pretty good again. So it worked out well, and timely hitting, timely pitching, and the want by that ball club, the veteran players on that team to get the job done night in and night out, even down to maybe a last swing. They did it consistently in 2001. And it was a remarkable season, to say the least.
Diamondbacks win the pennant in Game 5 of the 2001 National League Championship Series in Atlanta. Another one of Gubb's greatest. Final moments of our program today. You have a chance to win some of my money.
Huh?
Come on. Well,
yeah,
you do.
I got to get in that.
You
I
do.
I got to get in this myself.
The 50,
there's no coins
50
involved.
Raffle. Three coins and a fountain.
That's tomorrow.
Tomorrow. I'm sorry. Well, here,
Thursday.
You explain it. Since
there's
one to interrupt.
Go ahead. Show.
No, it's you. It's fine.
No, I'm just saying they're doing the actual drawing tomorrow.
Yes.
On Fox Sports Air. No, actually, pardon me. Thursday, right?
You
Thursday.
To me.
Already
is this
I'm
thing
giving
not
you incorrect information.
Is this thing not working?
April 16th is the drawing during Fox Sports Arizona's Throwback Thursday. 50-50 raffle is ongoing. You can get your tickets at dbacks.com/50-50raffle. And the proceeds benefit the Diamondbacks Foundation, which is helping to serve all those who are vulnerable during this current health crisis, which is they've been doing remarkable work in partnership with Banner Health and some of the other partners that the Diamondbacks work with.
Basically, the only requirement is you're in the state of Arizona, and you can do it. And you don't have to be present to win, because nobody's going to ask you to go back to Game 3 of the 2007 Division Series. As much as we want to, it was Gubb's greatest last week. It's going to be the game that they televise on Thursday on Fox Sports Arizona with Burt's
And it's a
there.
Good chance also, Mike, to remind folks that Fox Arizona every Thursday is doing a Throwback Thursday re-airing of a particular big Diamondback game, and that's when they do the 50-50 drawing. So that's also
is
every
that on
Thursday
the TV
on Fox
side,
Arizona.
Bert? Is that over on the
That's
TV
on the TV side,
side
yeah. It's on the TV side, Mike.
Currently, the 50-50 raffle
pictures.
Is up over, let's see, you take home half of just over $10,000 right now, which is, I'd say, pretty good for not playing a game.
Yeah, we can get it up. We can get that number up.
We'll go ahead and add a couple extra dollars for it. I think
I'm gonna. I am gonna do that. I forgot. I'm glad I got. I'm glad I tuned in because I got the reminder.
So the raffle has been ongoing over the last week, and the drawing is actually Thursday at 9:30 p.m.
Do you ever play the 50-50 raffle, Bert?
I do. We BB and I will play it. Probably what. On a homestand, I'd probably say about half the time.
Is it like the lottery? Like it has to get to a certain number before you decide to get. It's got to be like 300 million, and then I'll get in.
Is it a community chest? So if one person wins, do you all win? Or
you know, Leo, as someone who is often in the TV booth with his hand out looking for money
on the TV,
I'm not
side.
Sure that's ground that you want to venture upon.
Well, I got to go where my money is. So.
It's true that. I don't know how you get the wallet through the door, frankly. Hey, we should also point out that it's not just the 50-50 that the Diamondbacks are working with and helping out everybody
in
the Valley
more.
That's dealing with a situation. The team is in the process of donating tens of thousands of dollars in gift cards to nurses and doctors at Banner, Dignity, and other hospitals all over the Valley. These are the folks that are the real heroes here. They're working on the front lines. Some of the money has come from the Arizona Diamondbacks Foundation. The great part about this is other has come from personal donations. Several players have personally donated money, Stephen Vogt, Eduardo Escobar. So a great job by all those involved there helping our medical professionals all over the Valley.
I am not surprised that either of those guys are involved in that either.
Totally.
Eddie's so involved in the community, and Steve Vogt, everybody's going to get a chance to know him, I hope, over the course of this season when we actually play games, but he's one of the really tremendous people in baseball.
So they've donated money. They also, I don't know if you guys saw the pictures on Twitter about when Chase Field was blue. Did you see that last
week?
Yes.
Yeah, that was really cool.
That was very cool.
Yeah, they lit up Chase Field in lights in blue as a show of solidarity with all the other sports teams to support the medical workers during this difficult time. So it was kind of a cool thing.
The little bit of a left turn, but I'm sure if you guys caught this or not.
You're just there for that.
John Krasinski, from The Office.
Yeah,
I got smartpock.
Have you seen his? He does this thing. I see it on Twitter, or maybe it's on Facebook. I'm sorry, Facebook. He does some good news.
Because all the positive stuff is on Facebook and all the negative stuff is on Twitter. Is that what you're saying?
But it's a really cool little segment. He just goes around the country and all these different people that are, he gives you some good news in what's going on. But my point in bringing this up, you may wonder.
Yes.
It was, in fact.
Is that he did a really cool Why We Miss Baseball. He's a big baseball fan, big Red Sox fan, obviously. Mm-hmm. And a real nice montage about why we miss baseball. And he took the staff, the medical staff from his area hospital that works the COVID unit. And he took them, got them on a duck boat, and took them to Fenway, and they ran the bases. And it was just a really cool moment and a real nice it was just a nice feeling of why we miss baseball. And I think it's worth people's time. If you can look it up, it's fun, it's funny, and it's touching, and it's appropriate.
That's really cool. That's cool. I knew he'd done something, and I just had not watched it, so that's neat that I'll have to. Now that it's got the Leo seal of approval.
Well, yeah, I vet these
that's
things
the final
for you,
piece
Mike.
Of the puzzle right there.
You don't have time just to go searching for this stuff. You need someone to bring it to you, and I bring you John Krasinski and some good news.
What's the alliterative opposite of Leo's laments, Bert? Because this is Leo's loves?
Yeah, it's all about positivity.
Yeah, I think positivity. I think Leo Gilmartin. Hey, there was some actual baseball related news this past week involving a former Diamondback. Mark Reynolds announced his retirement, and Mark had some big seasons with the Diamondbacks: 44 home runs one year and a couple of 30 homer seasons. Big power hitter, good guy, and Mark finally deciding that now was the time to hang him up. Leo, you saw a lot of Mark. Well, you saw all of Mark's tenure in a Diamondbacks uniform. Yeah. Few guys had that kind of raw power that he had.
The sheriff. Oh, man, he could hit the ball. Man, it's unbelievable. What was interesting, when he came up, everyone was worried about his glove. And he actually played a pretty solid third base for a good few seasons there. But, oh, man, he could turn on it. And he, as we all know, he did not mind swinging hard and missing from time to time.
And 36 years old. And, 2 years ago, he had a very productive season in Colorado.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
was let go midway through last year, and now at the age of 36 is
he had a really nice career. He ended up having a very nice career.
Not bad for a 16th round pick.
Yeah, five different 30-plus homer seasons in his career. He was a part of some really good teams with Baltimore after he got traded there from the Diamondbacks, and had one really big season with them in 2011 right before they really got things going in that, four-year run that they had. 2012 was a big year for him with them. Especially, he had a huge, huge September, if I remember right. But, yeah, the sheriff hanging him up. I always appreciated Mark Reynolds as a grip-and-rip guy.
Well, we wish Mark all the best. Don't forget, guys, tomorrow, Jackie Robinson Day.
Yes.
Yes.
And the interesting thing about tomorrow is that this year, given the circumstances, it's really almost a virtual Jackie Robinson Day. Major League Baseball has got stuff going on all over social media and online platforms, all-day programming on MLB.com. The Jackie Robinson Foundation is actually launching a Jackie Robinson Day virtual learning hub, where youngsters can go on, if you're at home with the kids, teach them all about Jackie Robinson tomorrow. This is a great opportunity. It's designed for kids kindergarten through 12, jrlegacy.org, jrlegacy.org, for the Jackie Robinson Day Virtual Learning Hub, sponsored by Major League Baseball, all day tomorrow on Jackie Robinson Day.
So that's, and a couple quick
very
things.
Cool idea.
A couple quick things. I know we're up against it, but the D-backs are doing some special things along those lines as well. There's going to be some coloring book activities online, a Jackie Robinson Day essay contest, and Phoenix Mayor
1 minute
Gallegos will have a virtual declaration of April 15th being Jackie Robinson Day in Phoenix.
That's great. That's great. So that's all good stuff that's going on. See, there's still stuff going on around baseball, even when there is no baseball. And by the way, John Duplantier in the play at the show tournament lost his first game to Bo Bichette, but so he's 3-2 currently. But
come on,
you can
dude,
follow,
pick it up.
Let's see, what is his Twitch feed? If you are a Twitcher, Bert, are you a Twitcher? You're a little twitchy, aren't you? Dupe underscore there it is.
You can follow all this stuff on the D-back social media platforms. Mike gets all his news via Twitter. You can also do Facebook, Instagram. Stay up to date on all things D-backs, including the latest rants and pictures of smoked meat from Mike Farron.
Next week, another one of Cubs' greatest. That's coming up on Tuesday night next week. We'll pick out another one of the games that Greg really loved from his career with the Diamondbacks. We'll have another guest as well. Thanks to Carson Kelly for joining us tonight. Thanks to our technical director, Luke Robbins.
Luke needs a haircut, by the way.
Everybody needs a haircut, Bert.
Yeah, even but Luke particularly. His wave has turned into sort of a tsunami of hair.
For Bert and Leo, I'm Mike. Thanks for joining us for D-backs BP Show.
This has been